It is the purpose of WGNU's St. Louis Urban Forum to include a wide variety of hosts and guests that will discuss important topics of concern from all different angles and with different views. However, the views and opinions expressed on the programs aired on WGNU are those of the hosts, participants, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the staff, management, or ownership of WGNU 920 AM. We invite you to participate in the discussion here at the St. Louis Urban Forum as we talk together to make St. Louis a better city for all of us.
Good morning, St. Louis. This is Dave Moskowitz, and this is To Your Health. An hour of basically having me be your doctor. I encourage you to call in at 448-4325, or if you're a little further away, call in toll-free at 877-920-9468. This is the time for you to call in and get free medical advice. This hour is sponsored by GenoMed. Let me tell you a bit about myself and why I'm here. You've already heard that you should love your kidneys, and I totally agree. I'm a kidney specialist. And about 15 years ago, I discovered how to prevent most kidney failure, that due to diabetes or high blood pressure. I found it while I was working for the VA on North Grand. I published my paper in a peer-reviewed medical journal in 2002, now going on 8 years ago, expecting it to be front page news. After all, Medicare currently spends $40 billion a year on dialysis and kidney transplants, preventing 90% of patients from having to go on the machine or get a transplant would eliminate the shortage of kidneys. There'd be enough kidneys for the few patients left. So, my goal is to make dialysis, and actually the rest of the world, dialysis-free in the next 5 years. Everybody in the WGNU listening audience has been touched by dialysis, I am sure. Everybody in this audience knows a friend or a relative who's been on the kidney machine or is still on it. As I say, together, I want to eliminate dialysis from the St. Louis area within the next 5 years, and I need your help. If you have high blood pressure or diabetes, I'd like you to call me at 983-9933 or find GenoMed on the web at genomed.com. GenoMed is spelled G-E-N-O-M-E-D. This hour, call in and let me be your doctor. And we'll also talk about how the rest of St. Louis can get in the act and perhaps make a little money in the process. This is especially if you're running a place where people like to congregate and have time to kill, like a barbershop or a beauty shop or a laundromat or a pharmacy. What you can do is buy a blood pressure machine for $35 and get a large cuff for another $10. Then charge a quarter or a dollar if you want to make more money for every person who gets a blood pressure reading. Having blood pressure machines in lots of places so that it's extremely convenient to check your pressure is the only way we're going to beat high blood pressure, which has been called the silent killer, and which is the number one reason for kidney failure in St. Louis. Diabetes is a close second. The only way we're going to beat kidney failure and hypertension is if it's easy to get a blood pressure check. In fact, that's going to be the name of our campaign. Got a sec? Get a check. And you can make a little money on the side by making a blood pressure machine available in your place of business. Within a week or two, it will start paying for itself. We gave blood pressure machine to the main event, a barbershop and beauty shop on Olive Boulevard, and so far the results have been astounding. At least half of the people coming in to get their haircuts, and these are by and large young people in their 20s, 30s, 40s, at least half of these people have uncontrollable high blood pressure, uncontrolled, I should say. And all we're trying to do with GenoMed is control people's blood pressure and keep them off dialysis. How is it possible to prevent dialysis now? The answer has to do with genomics, the study of what genes cause which diseases. It turns out that ACE stands for angiotensin 1 converting enzyme, is behind diabetes and high blood pressure, as well as the kidney failure that comes to about half of diabetics and about a quarter of high blood pressure patients. So taking an ACE inhibitor is what you need to do to delay diabetes and to also delay the complications of high blood pressure and diabetes, which besides kidney failure is also includes heart disease and stroke. Cardiovascular disease or heart disease is the number one killer in the United States. Cancer's number two. Two out of three people die from heart disease. It is especially severe in the African American population. So here we've got a way to live an extra 5 or 10 years of life with good quality life just by taking the right medication. Now, a lot of you already are on ACE inhibitors like lisinopril. Any ACE inhibitor ends in the syllable pril, like enalapril or lisinopril. But it turns out that only certain ACE inhibitors work well, ones like quinapril or trandolapril. So what we've done at GenoMed is actually figure out which ACE inhibitors are best and also which doses are the best to use. It turns out that the current dose of 40 milligrams of quinapril a day, let's say, is far too low to prevent kidney failure. And just by going up on the dose to 4 or 5 or 6 times that dose, it's possible to prevent kidney failure. So that's what we do. We've shown that it's safe, and all we do basically is titrate up the dose of your quinapril. It's not magic, but it has tremendous clinical results. And I'd like to say that in the last 15 years, none of my patients have gone on dialysis, which is saying something since I'm a kidney specialist and the only patients I see are people at high risk for kidney failure. If anybody wants to talk about their own case, please call in at 448-4325, or if you're calling from far away, 877-920-9468. And we can talk about any disease. But my specialty, I have to tell you, is diabetes and high blood pressure.
Yeah.
Well, we're back. This is Dave Moskowitz, and it's To Your Health. And I'd like to tell you a little bit about what's been going on in the last 15 years, to tell you what kind of healthcare system we have, and to explain to those of you who, like me, didn't really understand why our healthcare costs kept going up, and why it's basically priced itself out of existence. There are 50 million uninsured Americans, of whom I happen to be one, and the number is rising each year. Medicare is predicted to go bankrupt in 5 years, which is the healthcare system for people over 65. So there's been a lot of debate about healthcare and specifically how to reform it since last summer, culminating in the bill that the House and the Senate both passed right before Christmas. However, the bill that was passed doesn't address why healthcare costs have been rising so fast. And I thought I'd share with you my own experience from the last 15 years about why healthcare costs have been rising. And it's a story I don't think you'll hear from anybody else. I'm an insider. I'm a nephrologist, a kidney specialist, trained at Harvard and at Barnes Hospital and at Washington University. Well-trained, I'd have to say. And I would never be saying this if it hadn't actually occurred to me. So, as I mentioned, 15 years ago, working at the VA, I figured out how to prevent dialysis for 90% of patients. The reaction of the VA, which was a single payer, and I mention single payers because a lot of people believe that a single payer, or universal payer, universal health, single payer system, national health service, they're all the same, that a single payer would be the solution to the healthcare problem in the United States. A single payer does give you access. Everybody would have healthcare. But what it doesn't give you is quality. And there are two things, quality and access, and also low cost. And so I used to actually believe in single payer. All I wanted was a national health service for the United States. But my experience with the VA, which was a single payer, convinced me otherwise. A single payer, when it's good, is very, very good. But when it's bad, it's absolutely awful. And in general, monopolies, when they're working well, do well. But when they're not working well, are essentially unaccountable and can't be reformed. So what I now argue for is competition and a robust public option. So what happened to me was while I was taking care of patients at the VA, I had 1,000 patients with diabetes or hypertension. Roughly half black, half white, half with diabetes, half with hypertension. All of them at very high risk for going on the kidney machine, none of whom did. After a couple of years of running this cohort of 1,000 patients, the VA went managed care. You'll remember that the Clintons believed that the solution to lowering healthcare costs, or at least controlling them, was to turn everything into a managed care kind of situation. And so they did that with the VA. The first rule of managed care is for physicians to obey. And I was using high-dose ACE inhibitors, high-dose quinapril, on my 1,000 patients. And none of them were progressing to end-stage renal disease. None of them were going on dialysis. But the dose looked high, and so the order came from above that everybody had to use low doses of all medications. Not that it made much sense, but it was just an order. And the way managed care works is that it's easy to identify people who don't use the right doses because there's the pharmacy is computerized. And so it was easy to establish that I was using very high doses of ACE inhibitors. And when my boss asked me what was going on, I explained that I used to use low doses like everybody else. My patients used to go on dialysis like everybody else. But then I'd actually been able to reverse kidney failure by using higher doses. He said that my results, even though they involved 1,000 patients, were anecdotal. Which is a dismissive word meant to suggest that whatever I saw was essentially a figment of my imagination and would never occur with a large patient population, and that I had to change. And this is the problem with single payer. Unless the healthcare institution is focused on patient outcomes, on clinical outcomes, if it's just focused on performance and what physicians do, it's a disaster. So you have to have things focused on clinical outcomes. Right now, clinical outcomes aren't even reported. You have no idea how many diabetics, let's say, in Dr. X's practice go on dialysis, or how many hypertensive patients in Dr. Y's practice have congestive heart failure and die each year. None of that is reported. It would be extremely simple to report, because just whether people are alive at the end of the year is really all you need to report, plus what diagnosis they have. But none of that's reported. So as a result, we have no idea how good individual physicians are or individual hospitals. And as a result, everything is built on prestige and essentially hype. We don't know where to go to get the best care. We don't even know what the best care is. If we started reporting outcomes, it could be that a physician in rural Missouri might have solved the problem of preventing diabetes, and nobody in any of the big cities had solved it yet. And then if we saw that Dr. A in Bon Terre has nobody going on insulin, then we could ask Dr. A in Bon Terre what he actually does, or she, to keep people from getting frank diabetes, and we might learn from it. And so the first order of business for any healthcare system has to be reporting of patient outcomes. The second order has to be competition, because the VA was one single payer, and they reacted badly to my eliminating dialysis. They eliminated me. But another single payer is Medicare. Medicare has been the single payer for dialysis since 1973. So for almost 40 years now, for 35 years, all dialysis and kidney transplantation has been paid for by Medicare. The bill runs to at least $40 billion a year, and it's the fastest rising component of the Medicare budget. It's 10% of the entire Medicare budget. And it's rising at a rate close to 10% a year. That's because there's an epidemic going on of dialysis. The number of dialysis patients in the United States is going up by at least 7% a year. So a few years ago, there were only 50,000 patients on dialysis. This year, there are 100,000 patients on dialysis. Within a few years, it's predicted that there'll be 150,000 patients on dialysis. Now, being on dialysis is not a good thing. Generally, it's a short, brutish life. You live for about 3.5 years, and then you die, and your life is absolutely miserable while you're on the machine. To me, as a Jewish nephrologist, being on dialysis resembles nothing so much as living in a concentration camp. This is not what you'll hear from most nephrologists who tend to look the other way at all the suffering going on, but I find it absolutely overwhelming. And I tend to believe, like the Star Trek movie, that dialysis should rapidly become a thing of the past and should become obsolete as quickly as possible. So dialysis is not something that you want. It was a stopgap solution in made possible by Belding Scribner from Seattle in the late 50s when he invented a Teflon shunt that allowed for access to your bloodstream and so that you could wash your blood. But clearly, being kind to your kidneys, as we heard at the beginning of this hour, and preventing kidney failure altogether would be a much better route to follow. So you would think that Medicare, who's single payer for dialysis, would jump at the chance to save 90% of its $40 billion a year budget. Yet when I went to Medicare in 2004, just a couple of years after my paper was published, and spoke to Sean Tunis, the medical director, and to Sandy Foote, his right-hand woman, about preventing dialysis, they had absolutely no interest. They referred me to the National Institute of Health that handles kidney failure, the NIDDK, the National Institute of Diabetes, Digestive, and Kidney Disease. And the NIDDK basically did not want to remove the K from its name. What I've discovered was that bureaucrats have no interest in eliminating disease, because by eliminating the disease, I'd be eliminating their salary. And so healthcare has come a long and venal way since the 1950s, when polio was eliminated and when TB was eliminated. And nowadays, healthcare has no interest in eliminating diseases because they're just too lucrative. And the profit centers are the hospitals and the dialysis units that take care of end-stage disease. So in a nutshell, that's the explanation for why healthcare costs keep rising. We don't prevent disease. We essentially get into the game in the fourth quarter. 70% of healthcare dollars are spent in the last year of life. So we're essentially trying to cheat death. That kind of game is completely futile. It's what you're taught to do as an intern and as a resident. And you can do it. You can keep people alive for 3 extra weeks in the ICU. But at astronomical cost, each day in the ICU is at least $10,000. So you can rack up $200,000 and $300,000 bills, but have done absolutely nothing in the long run, except prolong the misery of the patient and bankrupt the family. So I think there needs to be a movement within medicine as well as outside medicine to try to prevent disease, which is clearly the cheapest way to achieve the best outcomes. President Obama called for prevention, but the truth is there's absolutely no business model for preventing disease. There is nobody interested in eliminating their revenue. I've talked to all the healthcare plans in the country, all the Medicaid plans, including Missouri, but Blue Cross Blue Shield, Kaiser Permanente, Great West, all the health plans that cover people and are going to cover more people if the current healthcare bill is passed. And none of those health plans want to eliminate dialysis. They all have their reasons. Come back when I've taken care of 100,000 people, I was told by the head of WellPoint, which covers something like 120 million people. 1,000 people is not enough. But the truth is that if no healthcare plan wants to take care of their patients and eliminate diabetes, and I include Geisinger in Pennsylvania in this category since I had a contract with them, but then they never gave me any diabetes patients to actually prevent their dialysis. All the forward-thinking plans, the Mayo, the Cleveland Clinic, partners in Boston, the Harvard plan, none of the plans, despite all their hype, actually want to prevent disease. And so what I've learned from these last 15 years and the last 8 years in particular is that everybody in healthcare is out to make more money. Nobody wants to prevent disease. And the only way to keep, to invert the system and have it work for patients is, number one, mandate reporting of outcomes, at least in the federal system, by Medicare and Medicaid. The private sector will have to follow if they're going to retain their patients and their clients. Number two, have a robust public option that anybody can go to if they don't like their private expensive health plan. And for the robust public option, I don't think there's any cheaper way to do it than to use the public health service, which is as old as the country itself. It began in 1789, was chartered by Congress to take care of every American who wants to walk through its doors, and reconstitute the public health service by giving it the infrastructure that it gave to the VA back in 1921. In 1921, it was just a few years after World War I ended. There were lots of wounded soldiers lying around the road, and the PHS gave the VA 57 of its hospitals, which became the nucleus of the VA healthcare system. The VA healthcare system was built up enormously by World War II because 80% of that generation was under arms, the largest mobilization our country's ever had. But now that the World War II and Korean War veterans are dying off, they're in their 80s and 90s and have had long, productive lives. That entire infrastructure of the VA is going to quietly be downsized, at least by 50%, a lot like the military bases in the 1980s. That would be an irreparable loss for the country. Each of these medical centers cost hundreds of millions of dollars, would cost hundreds of millions of dollars to replace, and clearly we don't have that kind of money with our trillion-dollar deficit and our increasing war expenditures in Afghanistan. So the cheapest way to take care of 50 million Americans would be to reconstitute the PHS. You wouldn't need any laws opening it up to the 50 million uninsured, because the PHS already can take care of any American who walks through its doors, regardless of income. And that would truly be a competitive alternative to any kind of public health or private healthcare system. So if you weren't getting good care in Medicare, let's say you didn't feel like going on dialysis, but Medicare wasn't telling you that you could avoid dialysis, you could go to the PHS. And the PHS has salaried physicians so that you could have a lot more control over them if you were running the system. Medicare is kind of a hybrid private system. It's private doctors paid for by government funds. PHS is a purely public system. It's salary doctors, and it's totally paid for by public funds. So you'd have the PHS, you'd have Medicare, which is, you know, sort of a privatized version of PHS, and then you'd have the private sector, which, you know, is paid for by Medicare funds, but where the physicians are under no control whatsoever by the government. And you'd hope with three systems, kind of like our three systems of three branches of government, that you'd have sufficient competition among them that the net effect would be the right thing for the patient. It's clear that just having two of them is not doing enough for the patient, as this dialysis fiasco has revealed.
For a long time, you've heard about the exciting changes taking place on 920 AM. And after much hard work, new equipment, new facilities, and new programming, the new GNU has been unveiled. WGNU's St. Louis Urban Forum is growing. Exciting programs that bring the conversation about St. Louis to St. Louis. Throughout the weekdays, you'll hear classic wax from Motown to Stax. Your favorite weekend programs are ready to minister to you as they always have, and our nighttime is filled with classic gospel music. At WGNU, we encourage you to take part. The St. Louis Urban Forum broadcasters are waiting for you to call in and share your opinions and ideas. Dial 314-448-4325. That's 314-448-4325, and join the conversation. That is also the number to dial if you want to tell us how you're enjoying our music. We are always interested in how we can serve you, our listeners, even better. Dial 448-4325, 448-4325, and let us know. Call in, take part, and help make your WGNU even better.
Hi, this is Dave Moskowitz, and I'm back to your health. We were just talking about the shortcomings of our current healthcare system and a suggestion for how to really lower healthcare costs. And my hope is that somebody in Congress will tune into WGNU 920 AM, streaming live over the web, and perhaps consider it before they vote on the current healthcare bill, which is going to spend a whole lot of money but not do much to get at the underlying problem. We heard at the outset from the National Kidney Foundation to love your kidney, to love both of them, actually, since they're a pair. But unfortunately, the National Kidney Foundation hasn't breathed a word about my paper that shows that it's possible to prevent kidney failure. Nor has any other nonprofit organization that collects money from taxpayers and has a 501c3 tax exemption to research diseases. It's as if all the nonprofits learned from the March of Dimes, which, when they eliminated polio in the 1950s, became a shadow of its former self. So the American Diabetes Association, that actually gave my lab funding in the 90s, the National Kidney Foundation, for whom I used to work, the American Heart Association, none of the nonprofits that you'd expect to be excited about a cure for 90% of dialysis has breathed a word about it. And so it's like a tree falling in the forest that nobody hears. You can have a cure, but if nobody talks about it and nobody tells you about it, it might as well not exist. And that, I'm afraid, is what's happened to American healthcare, and indeed healthcare in the entire first world. The British National Health Service is just as uninterested in preventing dialysis as Medicare. So is the Canadian National Health Service. So having a single-payer system is not the answer. To get quality, you have to have, number one, reporting of outcomes, and number two, competition between a robust public sector and a robust private sector. Now, we talked earlier about how this breakthrough was made possible thanks to genomics. And genomics is the science that has just become possible in the last, say, 30 years with the knowledge of, with the sequencing of DNA. DNA is the blueprint for your life, that you have in every cell of your body taken out. It's a strand that would stretch 3 feet. Now, that's pretty amazing because the cell that you get this three-foot rope out of, the cell is so tiny that you can't even see it with your eye. You'd have to look under a microscope and magnify things 400 times before you'd see the cell. So imagine something that you can't even see unless you magnify it 400 times, nevertheless having a string of DNA 3 feet long. That's our DNA. And that string of DNA has 3 billion letters in it. And the 3 billion letters hold the secret to what causes disease. And knowing that secret is what is occupying medicine. And this is an absolutely glorious time in the history of medicine, because for the very first time in thousands of years, we're going to know the root causes of each and every disease. And what we found, what my lab found with funding from American Diabetes and the Missouri Kidney Program — the Missouri Kidney Program, by the way, has also not breathed a word about our ability to prevent dialysis, even though we did exactly what the Missouri Kidney Program was set up by the legislature in the 1970s to do. We researched kidney failure and we found a cure for it. But the Missouri Kidney Program won't breathe a word to the citizens of Missouri about what we found, because it would eliminate a lucrative disease. Each dialysis patient brings in $100,000 to the nephrologist and the hospital and the dialysis unit that takes care of them. But I digress. Genomics is telling us the root causes of common diseases like diabetes and kidney failure, high blood pressure, and heart disease. And it turns out that even though there are 3 billion letters, and even though one person may differ from another at 3 million of these letters, most of the letters are the same between us. And yet there's so many involved that there are 3 million differences between any two people. Between identical twins, there are no differences at all. But between any two people in the street, there are at least 3 million differences. And why one person is going to get cancer and the other person is going to get a heart attack has to do with some of those differences among the 3 million between them. And what we found in the 90s was that a single gene actually was responsible for most diseases. So 3/4 of diseases in whites and more like a half in blacks had to do with the single ACE gene, the angiotensin 1 converting enzyme gene. This is a great thing for personalized medicine and for medical genomics, for genomics-based medicine, for the medical revolution that genomics makes possible. It's a great thing because, number one, no gene testing is required. Just the clinical diagnosis of diabetes or hypertension is enough to start treatment. And number two, the treatment already exists. ACE inhibitors have been around since the late 70s, and the drugs that we use, quinapril in particular, Mavic, trandolapril, are generic by now, so nothing could be cheaper. Quinapril costs about 7 cents a tablet, and Mavic is not a whole lot more expensive. We use roughly 5 tablets a day, so for under 50 cents a day, we can prevent dialysis. And we can do that for any patient population on Earth. And that's our goal, is to do it for every patient population on Earth. But in addition to kidney failure, which happens to be my main interest as a kidney doctor, this overactivity of the ACE gene, we found also to be behind a large number of additional diseases. And these are the diseases we've published on. Sickle cell, where we were able to take a woman who had terrible sickle cell pain and was taking 4 Vicodins a day for pain control. She now takes no Vicodins at all except for 1 month a year. She lives in Modesto, California, which illustrates the fact that we can take care of anybody anywhere over the internet through email. So we published her case. It's now been 5 years, and she went from 4 Vicodins a day to none and has been holding steady for 5 years now. Emphysema, my original patient at the VA, Larry Hagler, was just weeks away from dying, and he lived an extra 7 years and a month just by me starting an ACE inhibitor in him. In him, it happened to be Ramipril. There turn out to be about a dozen or so ACE inhibitors, and they may very well have differences in terms of which disease they're best for. It looks like Ramipril is best for emphysema, and Quinipril is best for kidney failure. Another disease that ACE inhibitors or angiotensin II blockers, which are sort of a son of ACE inhibitors, are good for is psoriasis and autoimmune diseases. And this is a real revelation that autoimmune diseases are due to excess ACE, and that something as simple as blood pressure drug could actually take care of autoimmune diseases that normally you have to take steroids for. Steroids are not something you want to take long term. They actually can kill you if you take them for 5 years or so. So to have a gentle steroid sparing drug that's safe is a real advance, and we've published that for psoriasis. And in unpublished results, we've seen that for lupus and rheumatoid arthritis, and it looks like it may be a general approach to autoimmune diseases. And in particular, we've published 8 patients with West Nile virus, of whom COSAR, an angiotensin II receptor blocker, got them out of coma earlier than expected, much earlier than expected. In one case, within 12 hours. In most cases, within 24 hours. Normally, it takes about 72 hours or 3 days to come out of coma once you have viral encephalitis and are in coma from a virus like West Nile virus. The beauty of this approach is that it may be a general viral antidote, good for most viruses. And we actually went to the White House, to the Bush White House in 2004 to talk about this as a general viral antidote. The Department of Homeland Security was interested. Nothing much came of that. But it should work for the flu. The 35,000 people a year who die of influenza, whether they take a vaccine or not, our approach should work for them and keep them from having much in the way of symptoms, and should certainly keep them alive. So in addition to influenza, it should also work for the more exotic viruses like dengue and chikungunya and Marburg virus, hemorrhagic fevers, the kind of horrible viruses, SARS, bird flu, H1N1, the kind of horrible viruses that keep epidemic people awake at night wondering how they're going to handle a population outbreak. So it does look as if the ACE gene, ACE inhibitors, and angiotensin II receptor blockers are the best thing that ever happened for public health. The only problem is that nobody knows about them, and as a result, public health has not been served. That's why I'm on the radio this morning, and that's why I hope anybody listening who has diabetes or hypertension or emphysema or one of these other diseases I mentioned, sickle cell disease or psoriasis or any kind of viral illness, calls in to GenoMed at 314-983-9933 or clicks on the contact button for genomed.com on the web, GENOMED.com. We're reaching the end of this hour. The call-in numbers are 448-4325 if you're local, or 877-920-9468 if you're not. There are still a few more minutes to call in, and I'll give you a chance, and then I'll have some concluding comments.
Listen up, St. Louis. We know that our region has issues. Issues that need to be discussed. Controversial issues? Possibly. Important issues? Definitely. At WGNU, we know that there's always a lot of screaming and yelling about many citizens' issues and finger-pointing, too. It comes from all sides, and it goes nowhere. But the St. Louis citizens don't need that. What they really need is responsible discussion. Discussion that respects all sides. Discussion that includes a lot of light, but not much heat. Discussion where the sides really listen to each other. WGNU's St. Louis Urban Forum is just the place. The St. Louis Urban Forum is assembling a series of programs that will bring active discussion to the problems that face our communities. Programs where we expect that rational discussion and constructive debate will enlighten and energize all of our citizens. If you would like to host your own program and lead discussion of subjects of your choice, then you need to call Bert at 314-454-0400. The Bible admonishes us to come, let us reason together. This is the time to come together and start to talk about solutions for the problems that ail our community. Call Bert at 314-454-0400 now. Let us work together to strengthen our community. This is WGNU, where we bring new blessings to the St. Louis community.
Hello, this is Dave Moskowitz, and it's To Your Health. I just wanted to mention that there are some advantages to not being known. We happen to be a public company. Our ticker symbol is GMED, and we're currently 3 shares to the penny. So hopefully we'll go up a few thousand fold once we do get known. And now I'd like to open the lines to somebody with diabetes who's calling in.
I didn't understand. Hello?
Yeah, this is Dr. Moskowitz. What can I do for you?
I'm a diabetic. And you said you could help diabetic people.
Yeah, I can make your sugar control a little bit better, but most importantly, I can prevent you from getting complications of diabetes like kidney failure or blindness.
So what do I have to do? What do I need to do?
Well, all it has to do with is what meds you take.
I take metformin.
And do you take any blood pressure pills?
Yeah, I do take a blood pressure pill.
Which one do you take?
Oh, Lord. I think it's AM, start with AM or something like that.
Amlodipine.
Uh-huh.
Norvasc. Yeah, that's a calcium channel blocker. You take 10 milligrams? Or 5?
A 5. I think it's a 5.
Yeah. So 5 of amlodipine or Norvasc is a kind of a peanutty dose, and it suggests that your blood pressure is not that high. What I would do is I can't get you on a high enough dose of quinapril, so I would put you on Mavic, trendolapril, which is it seems to be a stronger version of Quinapril, and where a smaller dose actually, you know, buys you better protection. So if you want, you know, I can do this for real and follow your blood pressure for the next year. The cost is $200, but I'm giving St. Louis a 50% discount, so it's only $100.
Okay, so will we come in and see you or what?
Yeah, we do have to see each other face-to-face so I can write prescriptions for you. My office is on Olive at 9666 Olive, right near Lindbergh.
Lindbergh.
9666 Olive, Suite 310.
So I have to make an appointment to come in.
Yeah.
9666 Olive is Suite 310.
Right.
Okay.
So just give me a call at
983-9933. 9933. And your name, sir?
I'm Dr. Moskowitz. You don't want to have to spell it, but it's like the city in Russia. It's like Moscow with an itz at the end.
M-O-S-K-O-W.
M-O-S-K-O-W-I-T-Z. Yep.
All right, then. Well, then I have to make an arrangement to come see you then.
Yeah, and then, you know, follow you for the next 30 years. Hopefully we'll both still be alive.
All right. All right, then. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in.
Okay, bye-bye.
Well, we have a couple more minutes, and anybody else who has, it's as simple as that. Titrating blood pressure is not rocket science by any means. We do it one patient at a time, and our goal is to make the city of St. Louis and the county dialysis-free in 5 years. The reason it's 5 years is because we have to get to people early. If their creatinine is more than 2, if they've lost more than half their kidney function, especially if they're on dialysis already, there's not a thing we can do for them. And so we have to get to people early. Education is key. If we get to you in what's called stage 1 or stage 2 kidney failure, in other words, stage 1 is no kidney failure at all. Stage 2 is you've still got at least 50% of your function left or more. If we get to you early, we can reverse what's been going on and keep you from having to go on the machine altogether. But once your kidneys go past this fail-safe point where you have 50% or less kidney function left, all we can do is slow things down a little bit, and then the worse you are, the less we can slow you down. So it's really a slippery slope, and that's why early detection of things like high blood pressure, which nobody knows that they have unless they check it, or diabetes, which you also need to get detected if you have a lot of thirst or urinating frequently, if your sugar is high in your bloodstream. All of those things need to be detected. What's interesting is that high blood pressure actually leads to diabetes, and it's possible that good control of high blood pressure, especially with these ACE inhibitors that we use, may actually prevent diabetes. And so there are all kinds of advantages to jumping on high blood pressure early with a high dose of an ACE inhibitor that we're expecting to see. Now on line one, we've got Ron. Ron, are you there?
Yes.
Please tell me what is on your mind.
Doctor, will you be back on the air again soon?
I hope to be on the air the second Tuesday of every month.
Second Tuesday of every month.
But don't wait till then. Don't wait till then.
No.
Call me at 983-9933.
Got it. And just repeat all your information every time. It's the same information. It's the great information. So please do that.
Thank you so much, Ron.
Thank you, sir.
my honor to be on this station. Well, this is pretty much the end of my first inaugural hour on WGNU, the station leading the nation in terms of getting rid of dialysis. It is an absolute pleasure to have been with you, and I look forward to speaking together in the month's time. Till then, be well.